So this morning, as I'm sure you noticed in all of our texts, they relate somehow to seeing, that there's something that can be seen or can't be seen, as the case might be. Well, I was thinking about this, and obviously I felt we needed to go in this direction. When the lectionary is that straightforward about what it thinks is important, I'm not going to ignore that unless I have a really good reason. And I certainly didn't this week, so I thought, well, let's think about blindness or being blind. And then I started thinking a little bit deeper into that, because, I mean, we can talk about physical blindness, I suppose. We could talk about miracles, but that would miss some of the point of what was going on in our Old Testament reading and even in our Ephesians reading. And that's where the sermon title comes from. Blind or just not seeing? We sometimes think that the two are the same, but really they're not. If we need any kind of indication that we don't always see what's in front of us, all we have to do is really think about it. I was at a seminar not that long ago, and the amount of information we take in all the time is absolutely staggering. Like, it's measured in the millions of pieces of information, of which we can keep track of maybe 40, which is why multitasking is a myth, which is why we actually function. I mean, think about it for a moment. If say, when I walked from there to here, a space of what? 10 feet. If I had to pay attention to everything that is to be paid attention to, the feel of air on my fingers, the lights, the fan movement, the color of somebody's shirt, whether I'm wearing a tie or not, all of these things, they all exist. But do we pay attention to them? No, we don't pay attention to most of them, which is the way it should be, because if we had to pay attention to all those things, we wouldn't do anything. We'd be immobilized with an excess of information. And so when we see, when we look around, we're similarly doing a bit of a filter. And that also is a good thing, because it helps us focus on what's most important. And if we think that we don't do that, all you have to do is look at the difference between photographs taken by most of us and photographs taken by professional photographers or really good photographers. How many of you, and I'm not asking for a show of hands, but I'm sure this is not uncommon, that you have taken the picture, you then look at it on the back of your camera or on your phone, or think back to the days when you had it developed, and the beautiful picture of a sunrise is still there, but there's a tree branch halfway through the picture. Well, where did that come from? Did it suddenly jump in at the last moment? No. Do we suffer from tree blindness, or at least tree branch blindness? No, don't do that either. What we do when we look at things is we focus on what's important and we just filter out the rest. And that makes sense, and that's a good thing. It can get in the way of taking photographs, but it helps us function. The problem sometimes is that because we're so good at this and because it's such a helpful thing, that we sometimes think that we do in fact see everything that's important. That we're aware of everything we need to be aware of. And that simply isn't true. And we all know it. Every time you've bumped into somebody when you've been walking through a shopping center, if you've ever been in a car accident, which I hope you have not been, that was your responsibility because you didn't see them, it just gives concrete reality to the fact that we don't always see everything we need to, even though we mostly do. When's the last time you went to walk into your house and you missed the door? No, we do this very well. But that very skill often blinds us to where we need to see the most. And when we think of blindness and seeing or not seeing, we're stepping beyond the physical world in which we're talking about, even though the story that in the Gospel of John is all about physical seeing. What we're talking about here is, what are we blind to? And is it because we are incapable of seeing it, or because it's not there to be seen at all? Or is it because we're just not seeing? We're not looking for it. As I think I've mentioned to you before, Heather is taking a logic class at university this year as part of her degree. And so a lot of these things come up, logical fallacies, ways that we think that are not terribly helpful to us. And one of the ones that we do on an ongoing basis, and all of us do this, I do, you do, everybody does, is a kind of argumentation, if you even want to call it that, that is called a priori. And an a priori kind of argument or a priori assumptions are that you have decided before you've even begun what the answer is or where the answer will fit. And we have all seen this and we have all done it. Anytime you've heard somebody say, it doesn't matter what you say, I'm still going to believe something, that is an example of a priori assumptions. Now, sometimes they're right. There is nothing you can tell me that is going to convince me that 2 plus 2 does not equal 4. So there's nothing wrong with knowing the answer before you begin sometimes. But once again, our skill in doing that often interferes with our ability to not do it. And we see a classic example of this in our gospel reading today. In John chapter 9, verse 16, we see some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." So what that is saying is that there is a single, incontrovertible sign of a man of God, and that's that he keeps the Sabbath. Therefore, anyone who does not keep the Sabbath cannot be a man of God. Well, that's true, I suppose, if the initial assumption is true. But it's not. The Sabbath was created for people, not people for the Sabbath. We read that in Scripture later. And the Pharisees should have known this, but had allowed it to escape their attention. So when a man of God came before them and did a miracle, as Jesus did, their assumptions prevented them from seeing what it actually was. Were they blind? Were they somehow incapable of recognizing the Messiah among them? No. But how they thought prevented them from seeing what was actually there. Their assumption that it was impossible for a godly person to work in any way on the Sabbath prevented them from seeing the reality of who Jesus was. They weren't blind. They just chose not to see. Because that's the tricky part in this. It's a choice that we make. We're not talking about our inability to see the back of our own heads without a mirror. Two mirrors, if you really want to get technical about it. We're not talking about an inability. We're talking about making decisions in such a way that we can no longer see what's actually there. It tends to be bordering on a psychosis. And a psychosis is where you function in such a way that your view of the world doesn't match up with reality. And there's a story that I think I may have told you before, but it's worth it, to tell it again, that it helps me sort of define a psychosis. And there was a mental institution where there was someone who was suffering from the psychosis of thinking that he was dead. And he was you couldn't convince him that he was alive. No matter what anyone told him, he came up with some reason that dead people could do the same. You know, his hair was growing. He said, well, sometimes dead people's hair. I've heard of dead people's hair growing, so therefore, you know, all these other things. He came up with some kind of a discussion. Well, they brought in a new psychiatrist, a new therapist who was talking to the person, and kept asking him questions, trying to figure out some way to get through to him. And he finally struck in the city. He said, wait a second, do dead people bleed? And the man thought for a bit. He said, no, they don't. That's something only people who are alive do. So the therapist took his pocket knife out of his pocket, opened the blade, and stabbed the man in the hand. He said, there, what do you think of that? At this point, the man said, hey, look at that. Dead people do bleed. That's a psychosis. That's someone who is not seeing what is. They're not blind. The decisions they've made, and we're going to step away from the whole notion of people who are in a mental state where they can't make good decisions. I'm talking about us. The decisions we make where we just choose not to see. Where we know the answer already. We know that there's no point in talking about Jesus to people who are young because they don't care. Wait a second. Where'd you get that from? That's not written in stone anywhere. That's not handed down as holy writ. That's not in the Bible anywhere. There's no empirical study that will tell you that young people don't, that all young people are opposed to hearing about Jesus. That's a self-imposed blindness. It's a willful blindness. We've said that this can't happen, so we won't even bother trying. The Pharisees said that nobody is going to come looking like the Messiah who does anything on Sundays and who behaves in these ways and not in these other ways. And by doing that, they made themselves blind to the reality of the Messiah within their midst. And when we look at the Pharisees from this end of the story and we look back and we say, well, how could they do that? The same way we do it all the time. The same way we say something like, well, I'm not going to talk to that person about this issue because I know how they vote. There's no point. We do the same thing when we say, I'm not going to bring that up because nobody listens to me. Anytime we have this kind of self-talk that says, this is what the answer is going to be, no matter what, we're being willfully blind. And often it doesn't make that much of a difference. If I choose not to engage in a political discussion with someone that I'm fairly certain they won't agree with me at the beginning, the middle, or the end of the discussion, and I won't with them, that's hardly the end of the world. But when I say I'm not going to talk to that person about the challenges of their lives or their life and how Jesus might have something to say about that, because they won't listen, when I've never talked to them before, when they've never told me, don't ever talk to me about that again, I just assume that that's what's going to happen, then I'm willfully blind to an opportunity to minister to someone. And that's too bad. We're really not very good at seeing into the future. Admit it, we're not. There are some things we're pretty good about. If we drive our car and never fill it up with gas, eventually it will stop running. That we're pretty good at. Some of the things in the physical world, I drop something, it'll fall. If it's fragile, it'll break. We're pretty good at that. But predicting what people are going to say in response to us, we're really not very good at that at all. Predicting what people are going to think when we've never really talked to them, we're even worse at that, and yet we do it all the time. We might think of a coworker and think, well, maybe I should invite them to something, or maybe I should have lunch with them just to see what they're probably busy. They wouldn't want to talk to me. I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm too this, I'm too that. Eventually we sort of work ourselves into a frenzy of what we can't do. Instead of just going to the person and saying, hey, you want to have lunch? You know what usually happens when we do this sort of thing? You know perfectly well what usually happens. They say, sure. Or they say, well, I'm busy today. How about tomorrow? Most of the things that we tell ourselves are going to happen don't. And most of the opportunities we miss aren't because we're blind to the opportunities, but because we choose not to see them, or we have made choices that make them virtually invisible. We're not blind. The Pharisees weren't blind. The blind man was blind, and then he could see. And even that wasn't enough for them. And they weren't blind because they somehow couldn't understand this, because their eyes were untrustworthy. It was because they'd already decided that anything they saw that came from that part of their world couldn't be something. Our ability to limit our own vision is absolutely staggering. And we should never underestimate our ability to get in the way of our own understanding. And I don't say this to beat anybody up, and I don't have any feeling, as I always say, I don't have any feeling that somebody's doing anything in particular. I just know this is how I function. And when I talk to people, it seems to be a common thing. But here we are in Lent. Halfway through, well, not quite halfway through. We're 49% of the way through Lent. If you want to know how I know that, I'll tell you later. We're halfway through Lent. Lent has got lots of things for us. One of the things it has is an opportunity to reflect on things that matter. And maybe for the second half of Lent, maybe we should reflect on what we think we know that we don't, and reflect on the possibility that some of the things we do think we know, we might not know as well as we think. We do know lots of things. We know all kinds of things. We are filled with knowledge and wisdom. Let's never forget that. But just because we know lots doesn't mean we know everything. Just because we can be wise in one area doesn't mean that we're guaranteed to be wise in another. One of the most frustrating things that you can deal with, or you can interact with, or one of the most frustrating ways of interaction with people are people who say they have no blind spots. And you just think, how can you get there? Like, how do you get to the point where you think you know everything that matters? And yet, we often run our lives that way. We may not have the chutzpah to say it out loud, but sometimes that's how we behave. That's how we treat those around us. So for the rest of Lent, I don't know what you're doing for Lent, if you've given something up or you've taken something on, or this year Lent is not a Lent for you to do either one of those things, and that's perfectly fine. But maybe for the rest of Lent, let's just ask. Let's ask God to reveal where our blind spots are. And maybe for some of us, we need God to remind us that we have them. I tend to think I don't, but, you know, and then my better days, I realize that, yes, I do have lots. But for the rest of Lent, let's ask the Lord to reveal those areas where we're blind because we've chosen not to look, or because the choices we've made have made it very difficult for us to see there. And I don't know what that'll do. I don't know what we'll see. But I know, and I think all of us, when we're honest with ourselves, know that we have blind spots. And blind spots in areas that matter. And I know also that a gracious God will open our eyes to what we can't see, in the same way that Jesus opened the eyes of the blind man, that we might know him better, that we might know ourselves better, and through that knowledge, minister to those around us better. Knowing where our blind spots are, working to overcome them, asking God to help us with that, will help us to be an even bigger part of the plan that he has for us. For the rest of Lent, let's see if we can become more and more the people we were created to be, and more do the things that we were created to do. I don't like being blind, and I don't think anybody else does. Let's ask for the vision. Ask a gracious God to open our eyes that we might truly see.